If you don't get behind this wave, the thing that's going to happen is you're going to get left behind. This is not like 2007 when the blog revolution happened. And in 2013, you could still get on and be okay. Video is going to separate the has and the have-nots in ways that you can't even understand. And then as we start to look at AI and what AI is going to do and how AI is going to help those who are actually understanding what's going on in video and help propel them even further, the chasm is going to become so great that the cost that it's going to take to jump over that chasm is going to be greater than almost anyone who isn't above $1 million a year can afford. And so that's why now is the time to do it. Now is the time to start. You've been in business. Go do it now. Start today. Don't wait till tomorrow.
Welcome to Gratitude Geek, the relationship marketing podcast for solopreneurs building lasting, genuine relationships with clients, colleagues, and community. I'm your host, Candice Rodarte, and today I'm joined by the video content superman, Atiba D'Souza. Utilizing the power of storytelling and search keywords, Atiba catapults brands to the coveted first page of Google. With a proven track record as an award-winning marketer, Atiba has been featured on Traffic and Conversion Summit and USA Today. His expertise lies in video SEO, offering valuable insights on leveraging videos for marketing purposes and maximizing the impact of video content strategies. Atiba's knowledge extends beyond video SEO, encompassing topics like marketing, digital marketing, organic traffic, content repurposing, social media dominance, the customer journey, and AI. He is based in the Washington, D.C. area and is known as an IG food influencer. Welcome, Atiba.
Hey, Candice. Thank you. I really appreciate being here. And I got to say, you read that so well. I was wondering who you were talking about.
I wasn't reading it. It was memorized, right?
There you go.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So tell us your story. How did you get to where you are today?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I can take you all the way back to 1996, back to the days when there was barely an internet, which is actually a fun story. I had the first 56K baud modem in my neighborhood, and people used to come by to see it because everybody else had a 14.4. We skipped 28.8 and went straight to 56K back in 1994. Anyway, it started in 1996 when me and two friends were sitting in my mother's basement. We had just started a company, and it was a computer consulting firm because that's all you did in computers back then was consult, and you were a firm. Okay. And it was three of us. So we were a firm. And, you know, we were doing research because we were building websites. And that was something that no one else was really, really doing. And we were on the web searching and bookmarking things. And if you think bookmarks suck today, they were worse in 1996. And we had no idea. We had all these bookmarks. We had no idea how to find stuff. It was just a nightmare. And so the three of us sat down and we wrote our own search engine. That's what started me in search.
What?
All the way back in 1996. And I've been in search ever since.
Okay, what happened to your search engine?
Well, unfortunately, we didn't realize what we had. You can still find it. It's still on the Wayback Machine. And we didn't realize what we had. We thought we did really well because we made about $2,500 off of it. And we thought, you know, in 1996, we were hot stuff making $2,500. And then I remember the day when my mother walked downstairs, because we were in my mother's basement. She walked downstairs and she said, "Have you guys heard of this company?" Right. And I always forget exactly which one it was, because it was either Yahoo or Alta Vista, one of them. And she said, "They just sold for $2 million. Right. And we're just like, okay, what is it? And so we went and looked it up and we realized it was a search engine. Number one, we didn't call it a search engine because it wasn't a term that we knew.
Yeah.
Right. And we realized that they had done what we had done and sold for $2 million and we made $2,500. Yeah, we felt really small. And to make it worse, we thought the opportunity was over, which is why we abandoned it.
How did you feel when Google came along?
Yeah, right. Let's not revisit that and the therapy bills. but no, yeah, it was, you know, it was interesting with Google and everybody else, because we did realize we missed the boat. And really what we realized is we were ahead of the boat, mm-hmm. and we were too far ahead of the boat.
So 96, I started my website in 98 or 99. So you were two years ahead of me.
Yeah.
2 years ahead of me. I mean, I'm
ahead of most of the world.
Well, that's usually what happens is when I say, oh, I've had my website since 98. Everybody looks at me like, you know, but now you're ahead of me.
Well, so let me give you another fun story for y'all. Okay. So, you know, everybody's all into gifts now. Gifts are like the big thing and everybody's doing gifts and blah, blah, blah.
Interesting that you pronounce it GIF. That's so interesting.
So let me say this for all of you.
Yeah, let's finally get the answer. This is going to be short.
Number one, I don't know if there is an answer. Okay. But I say GIF because that's what we said back in the day. And we were actually credited with putting one of the very first GIFs online in 1996. And yes, you can go check the receipts.
Was it the Dancing Baby?
No, we did it. This was before the Dancing Baby, because the Dancing Baby wasn't until, what, 99 into 2000.
Oh, that's probably true.
Okay. Yeah. We actually animated a client's logo and put it on a website in 1996. Go look it up. Cookross Inc. Go to the Wayback Machine and you can find it in 1996. It's still there. Right.
You've mentioned the Wayback Machine twice, so you might want to tell the listener what that is.
Okay, so the Wayback Machine is this wonderful thing. Go search it. It's the web archive.
It's a little bit controversial right now because they're being sued and they're being told to take it down.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
So I got to go look at that. But so what they've done is they've archived the web and they've gone around and looked at websites and they take screenshots and snapshots and sometimes full-blown versions, if they can, of your website and host it on their servers. And you can go back and look at the history of almost any website in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I love the Wayback Machine.
I do too. When I had to rebuild a website, my husband retired and we let the domain go. Mm. And then he decided that he was bored. So he wanted to start doing it again, building handcrafted custom furniture. So I went to the Wayback Machine and I copy and pasted all of our testimonials and all the important stuff from the Wayback Machine into the new website.
Yep.
Copy, paste, copy, paste, copy, paste.
Yep. Wayback is awesome.
Mm-hmm. I love it. So you get there, you can just Google Wayback Machine and it'll pop up.
Yeah.
Anyway, what were we talking about? GIFs. Okay. So you created the first GIF, which was an animated logo.
Yep.
All right. So, and then what happened?
And so from there, our consulting firm kind of dissolved because, you know, friends, whatever. And I continued it on. I was the sole one left and took us into government contracting. Then from mid-99 through about 2005, we built several of the major systems, search systems for the government in this country. Wow. I tell people all the time, you know, I know this for a fact. Up until 2017, I don't know if it's still true today, but up until 2017, if you heard a statistic reported by the EPA, it came out of the search system that I built back in 2002.
Wow. Wow. Okay. That's impressive.
Every single statistic coming out of EPA came out of my search system.
That's impressive. Very, very impressive. Okay, so that's what you did then. How did all that catapult you into becoming the video content Superman?
So government, you know, if you're not in Washington, D.C., you may not totally understand this, but government will burn you out and burn you out quickly.
And which is why a politician goes in at 40 years old and 4 years later, they come out 80 years old.
Right. I left government and government contracting and we decided to go back into the private sector. Once we went back into the private sector in 2005-ish, in that time frame, Google was faced with a major problem. And the problem that Google was being faced with at that time, for any of you who remember this, was there was a lot of junk at the top of Google search. Whatever you search for, there was always crap. Okay. And this crap was because there were people who were gaming the system who understood, hey, if I build these backlinks, if I said these words, I can get on page one and be in the number one spot and get clicks. right? And try to push my product or service, and they were crappy. And Google didn't like that. They still don't like that, which is good. That's, they shouldn't like that. But
yeah, you don't want, you that's, there's nothing worse than when you're searching for something and you find junk.
Yes. It's the absolute worst.
We, as a consumer, we want Google to do a good job.
Yes, we do. And they know that. And so that's where they were. They were in this place of trying to figure out how to change their algorithm to get good quality content. Well, we saw search from the inside out, from the algorithm out, not from the content in. And so we understood what the client was trying to get, the searcher, and the business who wanted their search to be at the top. We understood what they wanted. And then we also understood what the algorithm wanted. And so again, in another one of those times of being ahead, we were able to really create a spec of where we thought Google was going and what it wanted, which was storytelling. True storytelling, and how to create a spec that the computer could understand that this story met the needs of this viewer on your page. But this content that we wrote here, and when I say story, I don't mean once upon a time. That's not necessarily always story, right? I mean, that is story, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about being able to show that there is a hero, the person who's reading. There is a guide, the business. There is a problem. There is a process to overcome that problem. Presenting that in a compelling way.
I love that you said that the hero was the person watching the video.
Yes, because so many businesses and business owners think they're the hero. And I'm sorry, you're not. You're the guide.
Yeah.
You are Yoda. Mm-hmm. You are not Luke.
Mm-hmm. Which is why I hate putting my photo on my podcast. I don't put it on my podcast app labels either. I put your photo on the podcast. But yeah, if you're looking at a podcast graphic, the square little thumbnail that goes on the front of the graphic, and you see a really big picture of the host and an itty bitty picture of the guest, you know, that's not
everything you need to know.
Yeah. Don't put your picture on there at all.
Yeah. You know, it was something that I learned. And so this is a big aside, but it was something that I learned a long time ago in marketing. And this was the early 2000s that I learned this. And this is part of what we took into what we do for our clients is if you ever call a company, right? As we all do, we all call companies and they all have those automated recordings. And if the automated recording comes on and it gives you options and the options are ordered in the way of, I want to make a sale to you. How can I help make a sale to you? Oh, you have a problem in your current customer? Okay, we can help. The order in which they list their prompts tell you what they care about.
That's phenomenal. That is phenomenal.
Right? And it's the same thing with what we're presenting. If you're presenting something and you are the big show, then you're saying, I'm the most important thing. And guess what? Your customer doesn't come to you to buy from you so that you can be great. They come to you to buy from you so that they can be great. Yeah. That makes them the hero.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we were in that 2005 to 2007 timeframe. By 2007,
so early in the process.
Oh yeah, we were.
So early, yeah.
But by 7, we had figured it out and we were ranking pages consistently and the formula was working. Right. And we did that. And it was all written content back then. And we did that all the way through till 2019. 2018 was an interesting year because the world started to change in content from my perspective, which was in a lot of the niches that we served, people started figuring out the formula. And then it became harder and harder and harder and harder to rank. I mean, we were so good, we could almost guarantee this stuff would rank.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But then it became harder and harder and harder. And it started becoming commoditized. And I was burnt out and tired by 2019. Yeah. And then my wife and I took a trip in February of 2020. And on that trip, I was like, you know, maybe it's time to focus on your business. And maybe I will wind the agency down and shut down and be done.
1 month before the pandemic, huh?
And then the pandemic hit.
I could have predicted something here.
And the pandemic hit, right? And then our staff started to scatter, our clients started to scatter. And it was like, well, maybe this is the sign. And then because I read a lot, I started reading Sean Cannell's book on YouTube. Okay. And in the process of reading Sean Cannell's book on YouTube and his process of what he does on YouTube, I'm listening to it. I'm like, hold on. This is exactly our spec. Like, but ours is bigger than what he's doing. He's doing like a subset of what we do in terms of how he creates video. Right. And so I said, I wonder, and you know, I wonder if we could take our spec and tweak it for video and help create video that ranks on page one of Google. That was the big, in 2020. We spent almost a year and a half in research and development.
Yeah.
Trying, twisting, turning, talking to actual customers and finding out why they hated creating video and why video content was so hard and why coming up with ideas was so hard. And we took all of that data and created what we have now, which is why I've earned this moniker of the video content Superman, of being able to take almost anybody, I mean that, and saying, hey, we can help you create the ideal content strategy that will, if you create the videos, create videos that your ideal customer wants and that Google wants to rank on page one so your ideal customer can find them. And that's where we are today.
And then you have to identify your ideal client. I mean, this whole process all starts with ideal client, the hero of the story, your ideal client.
Yes.
And then do I feel like I'm the hero when I'm watching? Like, are you my guide? Are you my Obi-Wan? Are you my Yoda? Who is the guide in Dante's Inferno?
Oh, that I don't remember.
I can't remember. Anyway, which is the ultimate, huh?
But yes, I get it.
Yes. You know. I mean, which is the first story. The first story. Yeah. It's the story that all other stories came from, right? Actually, Beowulf is the first story, if you want to go back in time all the way. So where was I going with this? Okay, so the people listening to this, the heroes of this story, listening to this podcast, are solopreneurs, micropreneurs, maybe nano influencers, maybe people who wants to be Instagram food influencers, right?
Yep.
So how do they take this huge lesson that you have just given us and make it smaller?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's a really great question. And that's a lot of places where I start with people is how do I start? Because let's face it, you're intimidated by video. I'm gonna call a spade, okay? You may not wanna say it, but I'm gonna say it for you. I know you're intimidated, go ahead. All right, now that we've got that out of the way and we agree and you can admit to me that you're intimidated, let's deal with it. Let's deal with it, okay? Your ideal customer, that person that you wake up every day to serve, that you love to serve, when they come to you, they ask you questions, don't they? Of course they do. There's information that they need, that you have, and they want to ask and know that you know your stuff and whatever else. They ask you questions. This is a very important premise, okay? And it's an important premise because something has changed fundamentally in about the last 5 years in consumers, whether it's B2B or B2C. And that is the average consumer in either environment right now wants to consider themselves as a subject matter expert before they buy a product or service. You want to know everything there is to know about that car before you buy it. Heck, you want to go read the nutrition label before you, well, maybe you don't want to read the nutrition label before you eat the candy bar, but you get where I'm going, right? You want to feel like you know what's going on and what you're doing. That's what consumers are today. And they get that by asking questions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The crux of your content strategy comes from answering specific questions that your audience is asking. That's where it comes from. So let's deal with what am I going to talk about on video? Very simple. You're going to answer the questions that people ask you. You already know the answer. Nothing to be intimidated by there. You know the question, you know the answer.
You want to be super impressed?
Yeah.
So about an hour ago, I got an email and asked me how to turn my YouTube playlist into a podcast. So I made a video.
And that's it. And that's what it takes.
Yeah.
Now.
And now, it was a short answer. It was a really short video. So it's a YouTube short.
And there you go. Right? But now you're saying, but that wasn't really where I was intimidated. Okay. All right. Now I know it was, but there's the other side of this.
That is it. But you know, there's always the but. So let's turn that but into and.
So let's deal with the buts. Okay. But I don't look good on video, but I don't have the right equipment, but I don't actually know what to say. Well, we just dealt with that one. So scratch that one. But I need to lose 15 pounds, but I don't have the right outfit. Okay. So let me ask you a very, very fundamental question right now. If you're a brick and mortar or you are an online business in some way, shape or form, and your customer walks into your brick and mortar or you have them on a Zoom call and they ask you a question, when was the last time you got up and you said, hold a moment, and you went to the bathroom to check your makeup or to see if your hair was combed, or you went to your room to change your outfit, or you got on the treadmill to say, can I lose this 15 pounds really, really quickly? I gotta answer this question. When was the last time that's happened?
I'm going to answer your question, but first I have to put on lipstick. One second. Right. I'm going to answer. Hold on. Let me put on lipstick before I answer that question.
Exactly. It never happens. It never, ever, 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 ever happens. And video is no different. You see, the thing here is your customer doesn't care about your 15 pounds. They don't care about the outfit. They don't care about the lipstick. They don't care about your hair. They care that you are the guy that can help them. They want to hear you. They want to feel your heart. They want to feel your existence. Just like you're feeling me right now, that's what they want to feel from you. And there's a last one. There's a last but, and I got to deal with this one, okay? I know you said, I know what to say on camera, but I'm boring. Okay, you might be. Yeah, you might. You very well might be boring. And guess what? So are your customers. And they're looking for somebody boring to work with.
Mm-hmm. Okay. There's a customer for everybody.
Exactly.
If you're not the right fit for them, they're going to find the right fit for them. But if you don't ever give them the option,
they'll never know.
Like, how do you know you don't like mushrooms if you've never tried them?
You'll never know.
Right.
Okay? So we've dealt with all your butts.
I kind of like you, Atiba.
Oh, thank you.
I got your vibe. Okay. So, all right.
There's one more but. That I didn't deal with. And that is, Atiba, you said all of that. Fine, I believe you, but the technology. I'm bad with technology. It scares me. I don't own a camera. I don't own a microphone. I don't own lights. I don't own any of that stuff. How can I do video? I can't do video. That's right. I can't do video. I'm done. I'm sorry, Atiba. You were wrong. Guess what? I'm not wrong. Because you own one of these. Yeah, you own one of these, a cell phone. And we've compiled a list of every cell phone made since 2017.
Holy moly.
And we've determined that every cell phone made since 2017 is capable of creating video that's uploadable onto YouTube.
So there's no excuses.
There is no excuse. And so here's how this works really quickly. You're going to take your phone. You're going to turn your phone on. There's an app on your phone called the camera. You're going to go to video. Once you get the video, you're going to hit record and you're going to say, hey, my name is so-and-so, whatever your name is. And today I'm going to answer whatever the question is. And then you're going to answer the question. When you're done, you're going to hit the stop record button. Okay. Then the next part is super crucial. You're going to immediately go to your all apps. And in your all apps, you have this little app. Every phone has it now, called YouTube. You're going to open that little app called YouTube. I know you're not familiar with it. YouTube. This is your tutorial on how to use it because you've never used it before. YouTube. When you get here, at the bottom in the middle is a circle with a plus sign. If you click that, the second option on there says upload a video. You click upload a video, it will show you the video you just created. You click on that video and it will upload and it will ask you for a title. The title is the question that you answered. Welcome to video marketing, my friends. This is all the technology that you need.
And that for search, exactly. That's exactly. A lot of people have trouble figuring this out. The video that I haven't finished uploading it yet, but the video that I made this morning is how to create your YouTube podcast playlist. So simple. No clickbait. How to, right? So you
do this.
Yeah. How to do this. Fill in the blank. Yep. And then the more you do it, the easier it gets.
Yep.
I love it.
That's it.
I love it. So, okay, that's step one. What if you want to get a little fancier?
Okay. So now if you want to get a little fancier, we can. Okay. Now, let me define fancy. Let me define fancy. Because when I say fancier, I'm not talking about video quality and video production. That's not your next step. Your next step is to go through the videos that you've uploaded and for all your new videos and write a description of those videos. Now we're getting a little fancier. Okay. What you're going to do in that description, you all ready for this? Get ready. Write this down. In the first two sentences of that description, you're going to repeat the question. That's rule number one. Rule number two, make your description at least 800 words long. YouTube will allow you up to 2,000 words. Talk about what you're going to talk about in the video. There are some experts, we'll call them, out there who will tell you that your YouTube description should tease the user or the viewer to watch your video. To that I say, when was the last time you read a YouTube description before you watched the video? So who are you teasing?
You can't even see the description before you watch the video. You have to push the little button to the down arrow to see it. Yeah. Or if it's a short, you have to figure out which button to open to see the description.
Thank you. And so the description is for the search engine. Tell the search engine what this video is all about. Discuss the points that you talk about in this video. Hey, add something in the descriptions you didn't add in the video even. Okay. Now we're getting a little bit fancier. The next step of getting a little bit fancier is transcribe your videos. Now, you can't transcribe YouTube shorts. They don't allow you to upload the transcript, but any long form YouTube videos that you create, they will allow you to upload the transcript.
However, okay. YouTube will transcribe your shorts for you.
But YouTube will transcribe your shorts for you. Yes, they'll do that. And so you want it to do that for sure. But you do not want it to transcribe your long form. Do not allow YouTube to transcribe your long form. This is a big mistake that a lot of people make. And here's why. Here's why. It will transcribe to a 70% accuracy. He said, okay, that's not too bad. But guess what? You don't get to choose the 30% it gets wrong. And so suppose that 30% it gets wrong is the 30% that you actually needed to get right.
So what do you, if we're not using you, okay, you're coaching me now because I let YouTube transcribe my videos for me. And my Aunt Rita really, Aunt Rita, I have mentioned you in every podcast episode for the last 10 episodes. So hi, Aunt Rita.
Hi, Aunt Rita.
So she wants me to edit the transcriptions because she reads them. Yep. And I'm lazy. And I just let YouTube, even when it spells my name wrong. So what software program do you recommend for that?
So there is one that we use with every single video. And please understand, we do hundreds of videos a month. Okay. And we use this with every single video. And it costs me, I think, a whopping $25 a month. Whopping $25 a month. Right. So that means
for unlimited videos.
Yeah. For a solopreneur, you can afford this. That's what I want you to hear. Okay. And we'll drop a link for you too, but it's called Descript. Okay. We use Descript, and Descript is simply amazing. We hire tons of video editors. Matter of fact, I just hired a video editor before this call. And on our call, I said, you know, we were talking and she's like, yeah, you know, I'm this in Premiere and that in Premiere. I'm like, that's cool. That's cool. I'm glad that you're so good in Premiere. Please understand, you're going to stop using Premiere and you're going to start using Descript, because we all use Descript and we'll show you why. Now, there's some things that Premiere
you're
can do.
You're really going to have to convince me on this one.
Oh, it's so easy. So number one, do you speak and sometimes say,
yeah. And that is the nice thing that Descript does, is it takes out the ums and the ahs.
That's number one.
Yeah.
Number two, you get the transcript right away and it gets it to you to a 90-95% accuracy. So it's a lot less editing cleanup for you there. That's number two.
And also you can find and replace, like if it spells Candice, C-A-N-D-I-C-E, you can replace it every single version of C-A-N to, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I get that.
All right. So you can do that. Number three, let's say you ask me a question right now and I give you an answer that you don't like and you want to strike it from the video. Guess what? You can go in and look at the transcript and hit delete on the words. You can highlight these three lines, hit delete, and it will edit the video back together for you. Cut that right out. Yeah, it will take you how long to do that in Premiere?
Okay, so I use Wondershare. I'm going to share my personal experience with you, which is why you need to understand why I'm so pushing back against this.
Okay.
Yeah, I use Wondershare Filmora to do my video.
I love Filmora. I have Filmora too.
And I actually use it to edit the podcast completely. So I edit the video and then I render it as an audio. And then I run the audio through a sound leveler. And then that's the end product. Right. So that's my whole process. Right. Mm-hmm. I had a minute and a half video that I wanted to use as a YouTube short. And I thought this is a good opportunity for me to try out Descript and see how I like it. Mm-hmm. I spent an hour on that minute and a half video trying to get it to less than a minute. And I finally just said, screw it. And I went to Wondershare Filmora and it took me 5 minutes.
So
the learning curve is the thing.
So part, right. And that's what I was going to say. So part of that could be the learning curve of getting to use it and know it. I'll share with you some of our piece on Descript.
Okay? Mm, yeah.
We've
and SOP it, is okay? Standard operating procedure.
And so we've got it. We've tracked it where Descript is 4 times faster than every other program. Okay. Likewise, you said you had that minute and a half. Well, if that minute and a half was in a whole episode in Descript, let's say you had 5 of those minute and a half. Well, you can just go in and mark, and it will chop all of them for you like that into individual files. The time saving of what it can do, and it keeps getting better. And that's the beauty of it. They keep releasing new versions that are better than the last. And so
Candace has a limiting belief about Descript.
but here's the deal though, y'all. And you'll hear someone like me who will purport to be an expert say, oh, Descript is it. You may get into Descript and hate it and say, this doesn't work for me, because maybe it doesn't work the way your brain works. And that's okay.
And that's okay, because there's always the right solution for you. If it doesn't work, find the one that does. The okay. best video editing software is the video editing software that you use.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. And beyond that, it's Descript. in truth, Descript does have its limitations. It's not perfect for everything. Right. We do love also, and you use Filmora, it does port directly back to Premiere. So that also helps us too. So when we need to do something more advanced, we can get it right into Premiere and then send it right back. Okay. But we use Descript for the transcript. That's what actually got us a Descript in the first place several years ago. Okay. And we've been using it for transcripts ever since. You take those transcripts and you're going to want to upload those transcripts to YouTube, right? That way your aunt will not complain anymore. So auntie, you heard me say it. So if you're seeing videos that aren't transcribed well after this one, you know why.
Because Candace is still resistant to Descript.
Okay, so that's when getting back to where we were in terms of the next steps of making things fancy. There you are, is the uploading the transcript. Again, the transcript, yes, is for your aunt who wants to read, but it's also for the search engines. One of the beautiful things here, which makes zero sense to me, is YouTube has a ridiculous ridiculously advanced AI engine that can tell exactly what's in every one of those pictures behind you right now, Candace.
Isn't that crazy?
However, Google doesn't use it.
Wow.
Why? I have no freaking clue.
Interesting.
Okay? And so that's why your transcript's important, because the Google search engine is going to go read your transcript to figure out what your video is about. Yeah. The next piece is your thumbnail.
So a lot of video people, video coaches say the thumbnail is the most important thing. And you listed thumbnail fourth. I find that very interesting.
Because it depends on what your goal is, right? Here's my goal. My goal is to help you get videos to rank on page one of Google, because Google is the world's largest intent-based search engine. In other words, people go there to search for something and they have a reason for why they're searching. They're not just looking for entertainment. They're looking for information. And so when they're looking for information, they're going to see the title of your video, and you want to rank high. So we are all programmed to trust position one, position two, position three. And so that's where you want to be. And so I focus on getting you there. Now, here's where thumbnails are important. And I completely agree that thumbnails are important. So I'm not taking anything away from any other expert who says this, that thumbnails are important, because they are. Here's where thumbnails are important. Okay. There is a very key stat that you need to track with your videos on YouTube, and that is click-through rate. Click-through rate means nothing on Google search. It means everything in YouTube. So if you want to know how your videos are doing on YouTube, first place you go is your click-through rate. Okay? What controls your click-through rate? Your thumbnail. Because if someone's in YouTube and it's in YouTube Discover, you know, they're watching a video and over here they're the suggested videos for them to watch next, they rate, because they can't see the titles, they rate what to watch next, and you know you do it, by the thumbnail. So your thumbnail is crucially important for YouTube. A lot less important for Google.
That's really interesting. I have a video I made 9 years ago about, I'm living with metastatic breast cancer. So 9 years ago or 8 years ago, I had a lung biopsy. And I made a video about the experience of having the lung biopsy. And to this day, it is still the number one video on my YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. I get comments on it at least once a week. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I always interact with them. And it doesn't have a thumbnail. Mm-hmm. But I think it's the traffic is coming from Google, not from YouTube.
Well, that's a really, is an interesting niche, because, you know, it's one of those things of pain.
Yeah.
And so one, kudos to you for being a survivor. And I'm glad that you're here with us.
Oh, thank you.
So let's start.
I don't have any plans of going anywhere.
Well, good. We ain't trying to let you go.
Modern medicine is my savior.
Okay. So it could be content there. Right? The video is done well, so they may be showing it more. It could be Google as well, which you can also search and research to figure out. Yeah. I would go look at the click-through rate on it too. So if you don't give YouTube a thumbnail, YouTube gives you a thumbnail. And it chooses a scene from your video as your thumbnail. Mm-hmm. And that may have a really great, may have chosen a really great scene.
Yeah.
And it may have a really great click-through rate.
Well, the lesson there is you don't have to have writing on your thumbnail.
You don't. You don't.
A lot of people think you do. And I'm guilty of it. I put way too much writing on my thumbnails. I think I'm going to stop.
So, you know, it's interesting, because this is a debate that we're having right now internally.
Yeah. Of
what's the balance between art and text on a thumbnail?
And what's the balance?
Yeah, that's the answer. No, so it's one of those interesting things. And so where we are right now is the reality. There are some people who need to read, and there's some people who need to see.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, how do you balance those two? And there definitely is way too much text on a thumbnail. I'm a firm believer, and the way we look at thumbnails is the thumbnails, you got like three, max four words that someone needs to read on your thumbnail.
Yeah.
Now, that it doesn't mean that that's all the words that you have, but there was one that we did the other day. It was, how does, I'm trying to remember this now, but the role of AI in personalization content or something, personalization messaging or something like that. And then it even had stuff underneath that, right? It was like, yeah, you can't highlight all of those words. But if you need all of that to make the point, the eye still needs to be grabbed by something. And so what we did, we said, okay, everything else will be small except AI, personalization, messaging. So all the eye sees is AI personalization messaging. Because that grabs the eye. And if you're in the mind of, I need messaging for personalization, and then AI is like, oh, it sparks curiosity. So you're using, the whole point of the thumbnail is to spark curiosity in what it is that you're saying.
Yeah. Like this episode, what might be called something like surprising video advice. Because it is. You've given me some really surprising video advice. And I used to, my current thumbnails for my podcast, I love this conversation because the audience is going to learn while I'm learning, right? And that's my favorite way to teach. Absolutely. So my thumbnail up to this point has been picture of you, full screen picture of you on a blue background with my logo, the episode number, the title, and then featuring Atiba D'Souza, mm-hmm. right? And going forward, I think I'll A-B test this with a couple of past episodes too. I'm going to take everything off except for the name of the episode. Not your name, not the episode number, not the logo, picture, name of episode. Yep. Because everything else is in the title.
Yep. And truthfully, they don't care who I am.
Yeah, they just want the advice. And a lot of podcast guests come on your show because they want to promote themselves. Well, they promote themselves by promoting the episode. Right. Look at what I did. I was on this show and this is what I learned from this show. The host was really groovy. Right. Yeah. And that's how they promote themselves, by being a guest. You know, my job is to put it out there in the world. Your job is to promote yourself.
Yep.
Interesting. I'm going to A-B test that.
Please do.
I'm going to A-B test the heck out of that. And then I'm going to let you know.
Please do. I look forward to it.
These were, oh my goodness gracious. We're getting to the point where we need to wrap up, and I feel like I have so many more questions.
That means, right?
I'm going to have you back.
Yeah, we got to do a round two.
Yeah, I'll have you back. So I do want to talk about Instagram food influencer.
Yeah.
Talk to me about that. There it is. I gave you no question. Just talk to me about it.
So that was an accident that we parlayed. So one of the things that happened in 2018 was I decided to lose weight, okay, and lost 70 pounds, okay?
Good for you.
Thank you. And I decided to basically journal what I was eating, right? A lot of people who know me for
you,
food.
You journaled what you were eating on Instagram.
And I did that because I've done this before, and I kept it in, Dropbox. But then it was like, oh my gosh, I don't remember what this is. And it was just files with random names. And I knew I wasn't going to organize, but I can just stick it on Instagram. It's a video, it's a photo, and I can quickly see what it was. Because now when I'm like in a place where I'm like, what meal should I make right now? I can just go back through and find something. Okay.
So were you posting every meal that you ate?
A lot of them.
Wow. Okay.
And I was doing it just for me, okay? Please understand, I had not even 200 followers at the time, right? And I was doing it just for me. And then in December of 2019, November-ish, the 2019, I stopped posting. Life got busy, I stopped posting. And I mean, who cared? It was for me, right? And I got a phone call. And I got a phone call from my cousin who said, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, what do you mean? Why would I not be okay? So you don't know how much of an inspiration you've been on your weight loss journey, because I've been trying to lose weight too and been watching what you're eating and making the same stuff. So you haven't posted and I don't know what to eat.
I love that.
Right?
And so Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
I didn't know that anyone was watching. No one was commenting or talking. I had no clue. Right. And so that got me back in a little bit. And then the pandemic hit. And so most people, a lot of people know me for food. I've been in food for a very, very long time. People come to my house to eat all the time, known for food. And so when the pandemic hit and we got into a place where food was an issue, you couldn't go out and eat. And there were a lot of people who didn't know how to cook. And so I started teaching people how to cook online. I actually started doing an international bread baking class, teaching people sourdough when yeast became a thing that you couldn't find, taught people how to bake sourdough bread, so on and so forth.
All on your Instagram.
All on my Instagram. All of that was happening. And at the same time that that was happening was when I was also reading Sean Cannell's book. Right. And so I was, when I said we went into research and development for a year and a half, that was part of the R&D that we did there as well, was looking at, okay, how can we, what can we do with my videos and change and see how that would all work, right? So we had several case studies and I just happened to be one of them, okay? And out of that became, at least in the DC area, a known figure of for food and, you know, and cooking and bread and so on and so forth. And so. Yeah.
So would you share what that channel is? Because it's not at Atiba D'Souza.
No, it's not. It's Cooking with Atiba. And I'll be honest with you and tell you, I haven't cared for it in several years just because we've been too busy with too many other things. But yeah, there's tons of stuff there. And I mean, there's so much content that I have that hadn't even been posted yet.
Oh, look at all those beautiful food photos.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Oh, and I love that font. That Miami font. Oh, that's really beautiful. Beautiful Instagram. Beautiful. All right. So links to both of Atiba's Instagrams will be in the show notes.
Yeah.
So you've already talked about Descript. Aside from that, what is your favorite marketing tool, tip, or technique?
You know, it's funny because I knew you were going to ask that question and Descript was going to be my answer. So
nope,
now
can't
you
can't use that one.
Now you want to say beside that. And so here's where I'm going to go. And this may not be a popular choice. Okay. This may not be a popular choice at all, but I'm going to go with LinkedIn.
That's actually a good choice.
Oh, well, good. I'm glad. Glad to hear you say that. So many people are like, LinkedIn, really? Yeah, LinkedIn. And the reason I say LinkedIn is a few reasons. So number one, if you're in the B2B space and you're not on LinkedIn, shame on you. Shame on you. And I'm not saying shame on you because you're selling to businesses and that's where you need to be. I'm saying shame on you because you're probably fighting a very difficult battle on Instagram or Facebook or other channels where LinkedIn is a channel where they're hurting for content. They're begging people to create content because
they have so many different ways to create content.
Yes.
They offer more ways to create content than anybody else.
If you like to write LinkedIn newsletters, they will promote your newsletter and get you subscribers on your newsletter. If you like to talk, LinkedIn audio is there for you. You can have massive conversations with people, Clubhouse style almost, on LinkedIn. If you want to create posts that are video or image, they allow you to do that. You want to highlight the fact that you just won an award. Nobody else lets you do that in a way that sticks around. You can put up a post today that will be gone in 30 seconds.
Yeah.
LinkedIn actually gives you a place where you can highlight your award and it will stick around and people will see it.
Yeah, on Facebook, you can pin one post. Yeah. On LinkedIn, you can post, I don't know what the limit is because I haven't reached it yet. The ones that I pin at the very top. And I pin my most recent podcast episodes.
Yeah.
But when I go and network with professionals, like I have two types of networking that I do, three types of networking that I do. I network in Business Networking International, BNI. I have my BNI chapter and I do speed networking nationally and I do speed networking locally through BNI. And then I network with podcasters and podcast guests.
Yeah.
And this is the premium. That's the hour and a half of my month that I really work hard to make sure I'm at because that's where I meet the gold, right?
Yeah.
And every time I do that, I get 10 LinkedIn requests. I never get an Instagram follow or a YouTube follow or a Facebook friend request. I get LinkedIn requests.
Yeah, because there's too much noise in those other places too, right? There's way too much noise. And so LinkedIn is a massive platform that's grossly underused.
By me, I don't use it. I mean, I interact with people, but I don't use it the way I should.
I dare say that I don't either. And my rating is I'm in the top 2%. So, okay.
You know?
And that's the other thing with LinkedIn too. There's something called the SSI score, right? Which is your social selling index. No other network will tell you how they view you. How many times have you posted something about?
How do you find that on LinkedIn?
Oh, it's so simple. Just Google LinkedIn SSI score. The very first result is get your score. And you go there, you get your score. And here's the deal. I've posted on other social platforms, and you'll put up a post and it will completely bomb. And you wonder, man, what happened? You may put up two or three and they bomb, and you start to go into that depression, I'm going to call it what it is, of have I been shadow banned? Did I do something to offend the network and they no longer want to show my content? And you don't know, and they never tell you. And you can't call Facebook and ask. You can't call TikTok and say, what's going on? You cannot do it. They, number one, they don't have a phone number, nor will they answer you even if they did. LinkedIn, on the other hand, they tell you. Not only do they tell you where you stand and how they feel about you, but then they give you metrics on what they feel you should do better.
Yeah, they do. It's amazing. I'm in the top 3% and I never use LinkedIn. And it does. It gives me all the things that I need to do to improve. This is a great metric. Thank you for telling me about it. And instructions on how to find it, because it was a little complicated. I mean, I was clicking while he was talking. So I'll include instructions in the show notes on how to find your SSI score.
Listener. By the way, that's a great link. That's a great short to make too.
Yeah, that'll be a short as well. It'll get done. So interesting. That's really interesting. And the fact that I never use it. Okay, so it says top 3% for my industry and top 8% mm-hmm. from the network, which is still, you know, that's still an A, right? Top 8% is an A, a great A, you know, on the ABC DF score, right?
So the network one is always interesting, right? Because as you grow your network, it's going to fluctuate, right? And so let's say Gary V joins your network. Okay, your score is going to drop, right?
Oh, and it also tells you that I'm in the business consulting and services industry, and mm-hmm. the average sales professional in the business consulting and service industry has a SSI of 37 and mine is 67. Mm-hmm. So I'm not even using LinkedIn that much. So imagine if I was a rock star on LinkedIn. This means that LinkedIn is going to show my stuff more.
Yes, that's exactly what it means.
Wow.
And it tells you what you need to do and where you need to work in order to get it to show your stuff more.
Dude, we have to book your next interview because we're going to focus all on LinkedIn.
All right.
So I will send you a link to book your next interview, and it will be, I will put you towards the front of the line for that.
Let's do it. Let's rock.
But we do need to wrap up. So thank you for this. This is exciting. So you taught us the four most important things to do with our videos. Mm-hmm. And you taught us how to find our SSI score on LinkedIn, which is gold if you are a marketer. So thank you.
I also taught you that you should be using Descript. Don't miss that. Auntie needs you using Descript. Sorry, go ahead.
I'm going to have to take some tutorials or something because it was not user-friendly for me. But I'm used to, I edit video off of the sound bar, the sound graph, right? So I find the ahs on the sound because I know what they look like. You know, my ah looks like this. So I can see them on the little sound wave and I can edit them that way.
You know? But in Descript, you press one button and it removes.
I know. Okay. All right. Sorry. This is your moment of gratitude. For whom or what are you most grateful?
Well, beyond my wife, is my staff. You know, the reality is I get to do these shows. I get to be the face, but they do the work. They do the work. They challenge themselves every single day to get better. They challenge themselves every day to figure out something. And you know, what we talk about is the stuff that we do is bleeding edge. Like, we're changing video marketing and we're figuring out things that nobody else has figured out. And so I'm ultimately grateful to them and their dedication to this process.
Thanks for tuning in to Gratitude Geek, the relationship marketing podcast for solopreneurs building lasting, genuine relationships with clients, colleagues, and community. Make sure to visit gratitudegeek.com for the show notes, where you can find links to all the groovy resources we've mentioned, including ways to connect with our guest, Atiba D'Souza. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review on Audible, iTunes, Good Pods, or your preferred podcast player so you never miss an episode. Our theme music is Track 14 by Rev Brock and Soul Lily. I'm your host, Candice Ridardi, reminding you that gratitude is like manure. It's just a pile of poo until you spread it around. Stay groovy, my friends.
Stay groovy, my friends.